someone were to shout out that the mayor of your town was a corrupt so-and-so and she'd be investigated for siphoning public funds into his Swiss bank account, what would be your reaction? Would it be to call for a thorough investigation into the accusations, or would it be to call up the accuser and ask why he had not had his shoes cleaned recently? Would it be to interview the mayor about the foreign bank account, or would it be to question the accuser about his choice of haircut? Then, were his replies about hairstyles not to your satisfaction? You would be forgiven for dismissing his claims against the mayor, because after all, anyone who walked around with dusty shoes couldn't possibly speak with authority about such issues. Well, this, to many, is how Spanish politics are being conducted right now. As new political formations are being formed and new calls for regional identity, the gazpacho monk goes in search of answers and comes up with not only an insight into why Spain is so much in pain right now, but also a handy remedy for dusty shoes. Get things into perspective. Moments like this are a rare treat. Moments that enable us to touch the previously untouchable. Moments that permit us to ask the unaskable. Why do we have a royal family? What was so sacrosanct about the Constitution that any question of it being changed invokes threats of civil war? What does economic independence mean in a global economy for any single country? Do we need a paramilitary police force as well as an army and a civilian police force? There are no straightforward answers, but this does not mean that the question should not be asked, particularly as Europe stumbles blindly forward into possibly a third recession, confirming the old order clearly no longer works. It's been almost impossible these last 2 weeks not to open a newspaper without reading the demands from Catalonia for a stronger, more independent voice, and the demands from an ever-growing number of people within Spain for a more transparent and accountable form of politics. As these ideas and projects unfold, the mainstream press, and behind them a loyal army of mainstream thinkers, have focused on what answers are really being offered by Artur Mas or Pablo Iglesias. Details, they shout, give us details. We are a generation that can only be satiated with numbers, stats, and manifesto pledges. I'd like to focus for a moment not on the projected and often hypothetical consequences of any plans or projects, but instead on what this tells us about the sort of questions being asked and the people asking them. Because sometimes it's not the answer that is so important, it's the simple fact that the question itself is even being asked at all. Ooh. But I'm aware that politics is generally eschewed as a theme in foreign blogs about Spain. I'm not sure if this is a conscious decision or simply that for most of the time, few foreigners show much interest. But we seem to have gone beyond that stage right now. The English language press is regurgitating headlines and misquotes on a daily basis that in turn are eagerly lapped up by the monolingual sock-wearing northerners. Ooh. So if you're not interested in the future of Spain, I'd suggest scouting for an article on keeping your swimming pool pH levels in balance over winter, or maybe one that advises the best way to maintain your tan while sampling the top 5 tapas in your nearest city. For those of you who do have a passing interest, we're going to look first at a couple of issues. 1, the age of arguments, and 2, a history of betrayal. Then we can quickly conclude with some jokes about Pablo Iglesias' haircut. The age of arguments. First, let's get this clear. The current expression for change in Spain is nothing new. We may all huff and spit and point accusatory fingers at its latest expression, the newly formed political group Podemos, but their articulated concerns go back some considerable time. In 2011, their organised roots were consolidated in the mass street protests and subsequent calls for transparency and accountability. From the kernel that arose on the streets of the major cities came a platform for focus and direction that has finally transformed itself into the formation of a new political grouping. But we can go back even further. Choose where you wish to pause. How about the end of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s, and the failure of such a new democracy to address any of the deep-rooted injustices of the dictatorship after the death of Franco? How about going back further? Let's go to the 1930s when a democratic republic was elected and then deposed by a military coup with the aid of most of Europe and the USA. Neither the republic nor their popular and radical agenda has ever been reinstated, despite the fact it was the last democratically elected government before 40 years of dictatorship. Spain has a history of betrayal. How many election promises in the last 20 years have been conveniently forgotten in the euphoria of electoral victory? A history of betrayal. I'd lived in Spain first in 1994 to 1995 under the crumbling and embarrassingly scandal-rocked regime of Felipe González of the PSOE, or Socialist Party. I returned in the summer of 96 to find Aznar of the Partido Popular, or the Conservatives, in power. He immediately began dismantling the state and threw the country into a war they clearly did not want. 75% of his government has now been imputed or are in prison, having received illegal payments. In 2004, contrary to what those whose lives revolve around stats and facts believed, Zapatero of the PSOE stepped into power, quickly dragging Spain out of Iraq, and then the economist tied his hands up before he could start dabbling with the economy. In 2008, Rajoy of the Partido Popular waddled back into power, and since that moment, Spain has sunk morally, politically, ethically to an all-time low. One can't help but see a pattern here, and it isn't a very pleasant one. For whichever way the pendulum swings, change, despite all the electoral promises, almost never happens. My socialist friends were, and now still are, horrified at my lack of loyalty. Yes, of course, minor differences occur between social, political, and international agendas, but in terms of how we are consulted, how accountable these politicians are once in power, and how transparent are their working practices, there is no discernible difference whatsoever. Immunity from criticism, back-scratching, envelope passing, and behind-doors policy decisions are pretty much identical. Such practices have only been possible, of course, because people have been afraid of real change and real consultation. Spanish politics in the wake of Franco have maintained their paternal presence, deciding what is best for us all. Such an approach has worked haphazardly until now, but today it falls on deaf ears. This generation has no loyalty to left or right. They're not nervous to references to the dictatorship. Both sides of the political spectrum are seen as betrayers, self-serving edifices that prop up decaying structures rather than replace them. And of course, this is a generation that have little to lose, for they have already lost. But they do have demands, one being that of consultation in a digital and receptive mobile world. One vote every 4 years and then a free mandate to ignore the wishes of an electorate does not a democracy make. Hallelujah. Certainly not for the generation of 2014. But I hear you shout, what can any country by itself do in such a globally tied economy? Well, there's a couple of things that I would suggest. Let's start first with accountability. For too long, entering in an official building in this country, I felt I was no more than an unwanted insect slipping in through an open window and then waved away like a fly trying to land on a bowl of soup. Just because I needed clarification, a bit of essential paperwork, or simply an answer to a question. This is a criticism in no way confined to Spain, it's a global condition. But we now have the technology and we now have the access. In the same way I can vote down a restaurant or a bad waiter on Foursquare, I want to be able to do the same in Hacienda or the town hall. We now have the means to share, inform, and ask for comment and ideas. I want to be able to leave my opinions for others. I want to be able to vote up or down someone's attitude. I want a say in how public servants treat the public. Sir, yes, sir. At last, we now have a population eager and empowered and ready to do just this. The second factor we can change is press. To make brave decisions, people must have access to all the relevant information. Private news corporations have an investment in deciding for themselves what is relevant and who gets access to that news and who doesn't. Sadly, like all the old print industries, they also have an interest in maintaining themselves as the guardian of what is considered newsworthy. Social media, on the other hand, has an investment in making everyone a citizen reporter. It has an interest in allowing people to decide what is relevant, popular, and of value. The power of the national and international press diminishes in relation to our own access to create and distribute news ourselves. And what about the economy? The global economy means a company can threaten to move its base to another country unless tax incentives are increased, wages kept at slave levels, and unions forbidden. Companies can and do insist on changes in national legislation to benefit the practices and profits of the company itself. Look at Amazon in Europe, look at Apple in China. I'm no economist, so I can't answer what would happen if such practices were challenged, but that doesn't mean to say they shouldn't be. And what makes you think that this system is so valuable, so irreplaceable to the great majority that they wouldn't want to risk losing it in the pursuit of something else? Dismantling the influence, politically and economically, of multinationals should be the first item on any political agenda of any political party. Otherwise, it's a case of never-ending silent deference to non-elected bodies, unaccountable with their own hidden agendas. The old ways of conducting politics and maintaining power remind me of the oil industry. They know their resources are limited. Each year there is less and less available. They know they must adapt or die, but they will cling on to the very last drop of petrol is extracted from the earth rather than ditch the lot now and invest in alternatives. Why? Because the profits are so good. Because short-term politics still sadly wins over long-term ideals, and because familiarity is assuring, whereas change can be challenging. It's a state of affairs that needs to be wrenched from the hands of the free market. Free? Since when has it been free? And placed back in the hands of collectively controlled and a decentralized federal state. Some things are too important to be left to the priorities of profit, as a suffocating and contaminated planet would testify to. Understandably, certain people and organisations feel somewhat concerned by the threat of having unlimited control wrenched from their fingertips and have embarked on a campaign to discredit and undermine the proposers of such changes. They have employed the traditional media to first disentangle and then ridicule these proposals and have begun with the wearer of the ponytail. The dreams of Podemos, knowing the answer is not the answer. Imagine for a moment you have a problem with your car. The wheels keep falling off. You take it to the garage and the mechanic says he knows what the answer is and gets out his stick of super glue. Off you go, and 5 minutes later the wheels are off again. Next time you take it in, the mechanic says he knows what the answer is, and this time dusts down the tyres, cleans the bonnet and puts some more oil in the engine. Then you pay the man and drive the car away, only to find the wheels fall off 5 yards down the road. How many times will you go back to the same mechanic? How many times will you trust someone who says they know what the answer is? At what point do you stop looking for the answer and instead find someone who knows how to listen to your problems and promises nothing more but to take a deeper look beyond cleaning the bonnet?
Excuse me.
So when someone who dresses in sneakers and casual shirts and once had a piercing over his right eye speaks the need to construct a new future, try not to focus on just answers. Listen to his questions. And when someone says they know what the answer is, take it with a pinch of salt, because mostly they don't. The best we can do is adopt open, organic structures that allow us to learn and respond to questions as they arise, ensuring consultation, transparency, and accountability throughout the process. Forget manifestos and promises set in stone. They are never, ever realised. Forget cleaning your bonnet and super gluing your wheels back on. Instead, try asking someone about their dreams. Don't focus just on the length of someone's hair. It's not the length of someone's hair that inspires millions to pledge their support, nor is it in the details of a manifesto. It's because they can share a dream. Martin Luther King spoke passionately about the changes he wanted to see in the USA in the 1960s. He spoke to us not of a 5-year plan or a 10-point manifesto. He spoke of his dream. When you want to give hope to those who have lost hope, when you want to inspire those that no longer breathe inspiration, when you want to motivate those that no longer recognize the motivation in themselves, you must speak of your dreams.